Claire, I'm a compulsive overeater and bulimic and restrictor. Still very, very nervous. It's been a hell of a month for me. Where do I start with this? I start at the beginning. I think my dysfunction began before I was actually born. My mum was going through a hell of a ordeal when she was pregnant with me. I'd heard that babies can pick up stuff when they're in the womb. And I certainly picked up at the age of 3 months old a whole load of guilt, and I did not know where it came from. I became a life raft, massive loads of codependency with my mum. Later on, said in a family therapy session, my dad said, Claire was her mum's life raft, and she carried all her emotions. So throughout my childhood, I was born into codependency, basically. So there's my first addiction. I always felt like I didn't belong. I remember at the age of five, being absolutely, totally, nothing convinced that my mum was saying, "You were always wanted. You were always wanted. Why do you keep asking me, are you adopted?" It's because I didn't feel like I fitted. I really did not fit into my own family. And I was incredibly socially inept and painfully shy of even people in my extended family. It's just like I could not talk to anyone. I just could not function. This was as a very young child. At 10 years old, my sister was born. And at that point, no, before my sister was born, I had become the center of the universe. Literally, I was the center of my mum and dad's universe. Everything was about me. Every emotion that they felt was filtered through me. And that was my purpose in life, was to be the center of their universe. Not helpful for an addict. So at 10 years old, my sister was born, and it was amazing because it totally relieved me of all this pressure. Like, all of a sudden, I wasn't everything to everybody. But then I found at that age, I found that I didn't have an identity. I had no idea who the hell I was, because I'd never had an opportunity to find out, because I had always been part of somebody else. Fast forward a little bit. So where this disease started, oh, this is a difficult one. I'd found alcohol to begin with. Oh, by the way, alcohol and drugs are part of this. So apologies if you don't like hearing about that, but it is part of my program and it's part of my recovery and it's part of my story. So it has to be there. It started with alcohol. At the age of 14, and this is really difficult to say. I was gang raped at the age of 14, and I'd just eaten something beforehand. And after that happened, I threw up. I like literally spontaneously vomited everywhere. And when that happened, all the pain, all the suffering, all the fear that I'd just gone through just left me, and I was numb. I was numb as hell. And I equated that to stuffing my feelings down with food and throwing my feelings up is the answer. That is going to be my solution. This is going to be my solution to anything that I feel. If I don't want to feel it, this is how I fix it. So how bad did it get? It got bad really, really quick, actually, as it goes. My weight was like spiraling up and down all over the place. Depending on which particular addiction was most prevalent at the time. So I'd go up and down 50, 80 pounds either way, swinging in and out of hospitals all the time. And my doctor calling me all the time. I'm jumping forward quite a while now. When my doctor started ringing me and saying, Your blood work's come back really, really bad. You need to go to hospital. You need to go to hospital now. And I'm like, no, I don't. No, complete and utter denial. I don't need to go to hospital. What are you talking about? I feel fine. And she'd say to me, yes, I know you'll feel fine. You've got dangerously low potassium and sodium levels. You will feel fine. And at one point, you will go to bed, you'll put your head on the pillow, you'll have a heart attack, and you just won't wake up. And I'm like, nope. Absolute total and utter denial. Did not believe a word of it. And then she started just ringing me up and saying, I'm not having this conversation with you, Claire, anymore. I've already booked the ambulance. They're on the way. You're going to hospital. And if you don't stay in hospital, I will remove capacity from you because it's that dangerous because you are about to die. Still, it did not make a little tiny bit of sense in it. It just did not get through. I was in so much denial. Little bit further forward, my rehab. My third rehab, actually, my third treatment center. This is where I found OA. We had it wasn't a treatment center for eating disorders. Although I had been into treatment for my eating disorder in the past, and it made absolutely no difference whatsoever because they just didn't get me at all. They didn't get the disease of addiction. But this was a 12-step treatment center. And they brought OA in. And I was listening to this woman, Cher, who I'm still in contact with. She's now on Footsteps, and I consider her to be a personal friend in recovery. And she basically 12-stepped me. That's where she's close to my heart. She came into the treatment center, and she said, bold as brass. I mean, bearing in mind, most of the people in the room weren't eating disorder. This is a mixture of different addictions in the treatment center. And she said, my name is, I'm a compulsive overeater and a bulimic. And at that point, my ears pricked up. I'm like, okay, let's listen. It's the first time I listened. I'd been to OA meetings before, but I just like kind of thought, nah, it's not for me. And I listened to this woman, and she basically told my story. Not the same background, not the same circumstances, but all of the same feelings, all of the same emotions, all of the same struggles, all of the same pain, all of the same desperation. She spoke to me in a way that nobody had spoken to me before. And in that meeting, I sat there and I said, because nobody in this treatment center would ever share back to when OA came in, because all of the other fellowships came into the treatment center, and there were share backs on those, but no one ever said anything when an OA came in. So I shared back, and I just felt compelled to. Because her share like really, really hit me like really hard, and I thought, wow, you actually get me. You actually understand. You actually, I'm understanding you. I have an identification. I can connect with you. So I opened my mouth, and I think I said, I'm Claire. I'm an addict, and I've got a slight problem with food. Understatement of the century at the time. And I said, I'm sat in this treatment center and I'm supposed to be in recovery. And although I've stopped using my other substances, I'm still using food to fix my feelings. So I'm not in recovery. I don't feel like I'm in recovery, and I'm still in a shitload of pain. Having said that, about five other people around the room said, yes, that's what I'm doing as well. So I guess that was kind of inadvertently a little bit of 12-step work that I did very early on in recovery. And it was amazing. And one of them grasped me up. They actually grasped me up to the counselors, and the counselors said, right, Claire, you're going to OA every Saturday. So I went to OA every Saturday, and I had it in my head. I knew in my head that I had an issue with food. I knew there was an issue. I knew my life was unmanageable. I knew I was powerless over what was going on in my life around food. I knew it in my head, but it took a while to hit my heart. And it hit my heart when I listened to one of my fellows in the meeting, who was also sent to OA. We were sent to OA. We weren't asked to go. We were sent. And she said, well, I'm not as bad as you. I'm in control of this. I don't need to be in OA. I haven't got that big an issue. Everybody else is worse than me. And it was the denial, the justification. And then it was, and I was listening to that and I was saying, oh, Christ sake, you can't kid a kidder. And I said that to her. I said, like, stop bullshitting me. I know that's a lie. And then all of a sudden it clicks in my head. That is what I said to myself every single day, that I'm not that bad. I can still be in control. And then when I heard that, my step one went from here into here. And it was kind of like a real massive moment, actually, because that's where my recovery started. Step two was fairly obvious to me. I was still alive, and I wasn't in control of being still alive, because I'd spent the last 25 years pretty much actively trying to kill myself one way or another. So that gave me a little bit of hope. Step three, I struggled with a little bit more because I'm a control freak. I think I should be self-sufficient. And I had a massive lack of trust. So finding faith in that took a little bit longer. My step four this time around, because I'd done step four and fives in other fellowships, and actually in OA, but not honestly, because I was still actively bulimic. So I was still numbing out. So this is the first time I did it without actually not using anything to subdue my feelings. And it was okay. It was difficult, but it was okay. And my step five was just amazing, because I've got an amazing sponsor who I completely and utterly trust. And I'm really, 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 really so, so grateful for my sponsor. I know her so well. We have so much in common. And my step five was kind of easy, to be honest. My step six and seven, I really didn't understand. And that's an ongoing thing, because character defects for me keep coming up. So, like, new ones keep coming up. And I'm like, okay, I didn't spot that one before. That's a new one to me. So now I'm going to have to turn that over. So six and seven seem to be an ongoing process for me. My eight and nine. I started my step nine. Eight was easy. It was obvious to me who exactly I'd harmed throughout my long, long, long history of addiction. My step nine, I started with somebody who was in fellowship, because I thought that would be the easiest way to go. It turned out she had absolutely no idea that I wanted to make amends to her. So when I messaged her and I said, can I come and see you? And straight away she said, are you on your step nine, Claire? And I'm like, yes. And she said, why? And I said, no, I'll speak to you when I see you. I want to do it face to face. So I traveled halfway across the country and I saw her. And it turned out for the entire month, she'd been racking her brains trying to work out what on earth I wanted to make amends to her. And it's weird. It's quite a serious thing that she'd completely forgotten. But she'd been speaking to her sponsor, saying, Claire thinks she needs to make amends to me. Does that mean I've forgotten something that I need to make amends to her for? I kind of melted her mind out with that one. And I said, no, Josie, there's nothing you need to make amends to me. But she understood. I started with her because she understood this was part of my process. So she said, absolutely, whatever. Yes, you can do. My mum was a difficult one. She shouted, she screamed, she cried. At one point, she nearly slapped me, and then she cried some more. And I had to sit there, mouth zipped, and let her have her process around my amends. Same with my sister, who it turned out with my sister, she'd been holding back on trying to tell me how much pain I'd caused her in the last couple of decades, and how distant I'd been from her, and how much she'd wanted to get close to me, but she didn't feel that she could.
Or more.
Thank you. God, I lost my track there. So we spent a couple of hours, her just talking and crying, and just like the relief that she could actually now talk to me, because now I'm in recovery. I'm actually available for her. I'm available for her, for her sons as well. And they bring me so much joy. And then there was Natalie, and that was a whole different kettle of fish. I'm not going to go into that right now. So it was 10, 11, and 12. 12 really hit me. And that's where I started feeling the joys, actually, of the Step Nine Promises. It was when I started to get involved with service. Service brings me on to the next bit, which is where I'm going to start bloody crying. My dad taught me about service. He taught me how to love fiercely. He taught me how to unconditionally love. And he died 2 days before Christmas, and we buried him last week. Whole new, completely new experience of step ones, two, and three. I really seriously didn't think I'd survive this. I thought I was destined to isolate, relapse, and die. I might as well give in to that, hand in all my service, and accept the inevitable that I'm going to be in the grave next to him. That was my first port of call. That was the addiction that just jumped on that vulnerability that I had. Yeah, that's so much. There's so much pain. He also taught me, like, he didn't just teach me service, he taught me loyalty, he taught me dedication, and putting other people first. What I've learned in the last month, because I have this program in my life, because I have my sponsor, because I have my fellows, because I have my meetings, because I have my service, because I'm working this program hard, and this program bloody well works. I've learned that I can love fiercely. I can feel pain and joy at the same time. I can have tears, and then I can have laughter. I can hold more than one emotion at the same time, which I never thought was possible. I've learned that the only thing that I've actually done right in this program, that I've done completely right, is that I kept coming back. However, on that, there was an old timer who said, and excuse my language here if anybody's language would be offended by this, and I have to quote him. Have to quote him. He said, "You know that keep coming back quote, Claire." fuck that one off. What you need to do, Claire, is don't ever fucking leave. Stick some super glue to your ass, stick your ass to the seat, and don't go away. And that's, I will testify to, because I was bouncing in and out and in and out and in and out of the rooms for 30 years, and it got me nowhere. The other thing I wanted to say was, don't leave before the miracle happens. That's another quote from, well-publicised quote. And I would say, don't leave even when the miracle happens. Because the miracle happened for me. Ninth step problems happen. It is a complete miracle that I've got through the last month. In fact, that I've got through my entire life without A, being dead, and B, being abstinent, and being able to sit here with the fear of people promise having been removed, that I can sit in this room and share with you. That would have been completely impossible a few years ago. And the miracle did happen. And I really believe that if you work this program rigorously, it can for anyone. So, but don't leave before the miracle happens, I think is a little bit of a misquote. I want to change that to don't leave even when the miracle happens, because when the miracle happens, more happens. The miracle happens, and it piles on more and more, that more will be revealed. I came into this program asking for two things: stop me binging, stop me purging. That's it. That's all I wanted. And I've got so much more from this program. So just don't leave. Super glue your bum to the seat and don't leave. There is so much more this program can give you. It's miraculous. And I'm going to leave it there, because I'm rambling now. Because I would like to hear from everybody else, because I'm sick of the sound of my own voice now. Thank you.